Chapter 31. Gulnar absconds. 1958-1960. Resentment is anger directed at others, at what they did or did not do. Peter McWilliams. With rising military tensions, the policies regarding leaving Egypt had become progressively more restrictive. Departing citizens could not legally take more than $12 out of the country. Neither Gulnar nor I had passports. Egypt allowed a joint passport for children in the family under age 5, and ours had expired long ago. With Daddy's death, we had to forfeit our UN documents. Getting new ones under the current political climate was nearly impossible. While Mother carried an Egyptian passport, she would never leave her children once more, not to mention her money. Even if she had wanted to exit, she would need a male's written permission, in this case mine, as I was the head of household. Leaving Egypt as a family was not an option. To help us get by, Frau Reiner, a teacher at the German high school, moved into our guest bedroom. She was a strange, middle-aged woman who spoke little, kept to herself, and had a persistently worried look on her face that tended to age her. She took most meals with us. Sitting at the table, I tried to engage her in general conversation about the last war. She stated, between sips of tomato soup, that the winter of 1946 had been particularly cold. Having lost everything, she stole a blanket from the British occupying forces. The four of us sat in silence following that disclosure. To provoke her into further revelations, I asked, "Isn't that a sin?" She looked up, spoon halfway to her mouth, and gaped at me across the table without a reply. She completed her meal without another word, rose and left, closing the door to her room. Mother and Gulnar were fighting over almost everything. Gulnar seemed unhappy most of the time. The root cause was her grievance at not receiving her 24% inheritance. I did not understand her discontent. Miners were not entitled to such funds. Besides, Mother was feeding us, clothing us, and paying our private school tuition. If we knew what funds might be due us, what exactly would Gulnar have done with the money? Even so, Mother was unwise to dismiss her complaints as trivial. As a family, we had no fun. We had no social togetherness, no transgenerational parties involving Mother's friends and their adolescent children, only parties I arranged with my school friends. As a teenager, I was emotionally alone and awkward around girls. Apart from the girls I knew from class and the club, I did not know how to develop intimate friendships, nor the progression of friendship to the development of love. In May of 1958, Gulnar graduated from the senior school with her English O-levels. She celebrated by attending a dance party at school and falling in love with a fellow student, Mansur. After that, she consistently broke her curfew, generating ongoing tension and endless arguments with Mother, who kept insisting her daughter not compromise her reputation by violating the 10 p.m. curfew. As head of the household, I agreed with Mother in principle, but sided with Gulnar to spite Mother. Minu, Assad's sister, invited Gulnar to a graduation party at the Indian embassy. Gulnar returned with the gift of a sari. Its silk sheen made the reds, greens, black and gold glimmer magnificently when Gulnar paraded in it, whirling around and catching the sunlight. Mother showed only passing interest in the present and pondered aloud, "What on earth are you going to do with it?" Disappointed, Gulnar stopped her sari modelling. Gulnar was growing into a young woman, and Mother couldn't handle it. Around that time, I overheard Mother and Frau Reiner discuss transferring Gulnar to the German school. She was almost 17. From that point onwards, our lives diverged even further. Entrenched in two different cultures, we progressively became strangers. Gulnar spoke German to Mother, but I spoke in English to both of them. I focused on learning Arabic and tried to maintain contact with Giddi. She showed no such inclination. Her new friends were German. She dropped her English school links. Our daily family existence was bizarre. Mother was gone all day teaching, while Gulnar was involved with German school activities. I hovered between the dual orbits of my Egyptian family with prevailing Muslim mores and British school with its European culture. In our schools and at home we lived according to the Gregorian calendar instead of the Islamic calendar that was in use throughout Egypt. Each culture celebrated holy days at different times, leading to social disconnection. My mother recognized Christmas. Prior to Christmas Eve, she would string up seasonal decorations, make special meals, and sing along with carols on our shortwave radio. Relative to Christmas events in Vedel, it was a stripped-down affair. These activities seemed to fit her memories of Christmas, but there were no presents, no fun, no cheerful togetherness, and no stollen. It was not clear if Mother was indifferent or unaware, but she did not observe Muslim holidays. She did not anticipate the dates that changed each year due to the Islamic lunar calendar, nor did she understand their societal significance, their meaning of gratitude, or their importance to me. The timings of Eid al-Fitr, celebrated at the end of the one-month fast of Ramadan, and four-day Eid al-Adha feast, the feast of the sacrifice, took me by unpleasant surprise, always too late to find my way to family members and participate. I wanted to live as an Egyptian, and yet gradually saw less of them, even my beloved Giddi. Limited contact with my Egyptian family meant I lived in a German bubble. Mother did not celebrate our birthdays. No cards, no cake, no presents. Since the national holiday, Shem el-Nesim, Rites of Spring, fell like Easter around my April birthday, I was conscious of becoming a year older. When I reminded her that it was the day of my birth, she generally replied, "I was there." At such moments I yearned for the geniality and belonging of Vedel, with Oma's cakes and celebratory gatherings. I couldn't understand why Oma's warmth had not passed on to Mother. A week after the date of my birth, to which I could hardly refer as my birthday, Mother received a letter and proclaimed with pride, "Freimuth has written from Hamburg. He is on a trip around the Middle East. He wants to visit Tante Gretchen in 2 weeks." She emphasized Tante. "He's the 24-year-old son of Hildegard Duwe, who was with me in England in the 1930s. Mother continued, "a handsome young man." Gulnar's eyes lit up. Freimuth's arrival was imminent, and Mother wondered how we should entertain him. As she considered this, Gulnar appeared in a cocktail dress, secretively tailored from the sari. It was strapless, bare-backed, and narrow at the waist, with a full skirt ending above her knees. She looked stunning, twirling around in her high heels. I told her so. She smiled and twirled again. Mother was shocked. "Oh my goodness, you look naked. You are much too young. You cannot wear it in Egypt. Your father would never allow it." Gulnar was defiant, belittling and dismissive of Mother's jealousy, packaged as conservative sentiments. Arguments between them ended with Mother in tears and Gulnar slamming her bedroom door. The conflict revolved only partially around the dress. In actuality, I could see it was more about Mother's realization that her baby was growing into a desirable, beautiful woman and that her own influence was waning. Freimuth arrived with flowers in hand for Tante Gretchen, talking non-stop in a jovial mixture of German, English, and rudimentary Arabic. Mother had baked a cake. Imagine, a cake for him, but not for my birthday. We sat enjoying afternoon tea. The pull between Gulnar and Freimuth was magnetic. She spent most of her time with him during his week-long visit. Mother at first seemed delighted by the friendship that developed between the two young people, but became increasingly concerned as Gulnar repeatedly defied her nightly curfew. Tension simmered between the two women throughout Freimuth's visit. During her 2 years at the German school preparing for her Abitur, Gulnar had obsessively propagated rumours among her teachers, particularly her adviser, Frau Dr. Förster, that as her legal guardian, I would marry her off to an Egyptian to forge a strong family alliance, thus securing my and Mother's future in Egypt. Approaching marriageable age, Gulnar embroidered her fear of my power over her. Her teachers were appalled by the tenets of 7th-century family law, men's dominance over women's fate, that remained indifferent to any appreciation of their social context. Frau Dr. Förster took me aside and lectured me against forced marriage whenever I attended Gulnar's school functions. Unaware of Gulnar's covert crusade of instilling alarm, this puzzled me since I had no such aspirations. I was preoccupied with my interest in airplanes and gliding, as well as studying for my final exams in mid-1960, and the prospects of my own survival, given my potential for conscription. Her teacher, mother, and Gulnar maintained a conspiratorial silence to get Gulnar out of Egypt. On passing her Abitur in the late spring of 1960, she became eligible to enter a German university. With the intent of removing her from the perceived danger of my marrying her off, Gulnar's teachers sponsored her for a scholarship to study pedagogy at Heidelberg University. The Egyptian Overseas Office of the Ministry of Education enabled Gulnar to obtain a passport, assuring her an exit ticket from Egypt. The scholarship covered the cost of tuition and living expenses. My mother's banking friend suggested she use this opportunity to legally transfer funds out of the country on a monthly basis, ostensibly to support her daughter. In actuality, the money would be banked and saved for mother to live outside of Egypt some day when she could leave the country. One day, Gulnar simply disappeared. She left in the early hours of the morning while I was asleep. I, as nominal head of the household, had been sidelined, ignored, deceived, and kept entirely in the dark. It was only upon returning from my last O-levels and Taugahiyya examination, exhausted, that I learned of my sister's departure that morning. At the same time, I discovered that mother and Gulnar had conspired for at least 2 years behind my back. The perception of my being a villain and my exclusion from family discussions hurt me deeply. Gulnar didn't even say goodbye or leave a note. I felt betrayed, distrusted, and inconsequential. I was 16, the age of conscription, and the one at risk of becoming a common soldier. Yet they had not included me in an exit plan from Egypt. Once Gulnar left, she did not correspond with us. An overseas bank account was desirable. Mother had trusted Gulnar to open a joint account in Germany in both their names. Mother eagerly transferred money on a monthly basis to a bank in Heidelberg, failing to recognize that it was only in Gulnar's name. Gulnar kept the money, claiming when she was 18 that it was rightfully hers, part of her 24% inheritance. Gulnar's deceit caused the beginning of an irreparable fissure between the two women. In hindsight, had mother missed a crucial indicator of the depth of her daughter's deep-seated insecurity, or was it revenge or spite? It was not about the money. It was my sister's chronic fear of the loss of her independence and want for love. To Gulnar, money meant control, a mindset that started with the stealing of Omar's money when she was 7. Mother never told me of Gulnar's embezzlement. She was too embarrassed. I only learned of this and subsequent costly thefts when I acquired an extensive, acrimonious correspondence between them years later, finally explaining their treacherous, lifelong battle over finances.